Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi everyone, Jamie Smith here, Burnley fan. I write and edit the No Name Never newsletter, which goes out via Substack periodically, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Jamie Smith Sport.
Hey, I'm Jay. I'm from the Eagles Beak website for by fans. For Palace fans, check us out, Eaglesbeak, or across all social media, and our email is info@eaglesbeak.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. I figure we'll start off with, obviously, the big match of the day, Manchester City and Liverpool. Of course, title ramifications for both ends up being a level draw. Just wanted to start off by asking you guys what you thought of the match and any repercussions you think we'll see because of it.
Well, it was really fun, for starters. I think City v Liverpool games in recent years, so Klopp and Guardiola going head-to-head, they tend to deliver, and I thought today's was very, very entertaining. City probably had the best of the first half, edged it, 1-0 was probably about right at half-time. Liverpool started the second half really, really strongly. They were all over City for a time. I think Guardiola putting on Kovacic sort of swung it back in their favour, but both teams had an awful lot of chances. Luis Diaz had a couple of really golden chances that he didn't take. It had a bit of everything, didn't it? Penalty appeals at the end that could have been given. Phil Foden almost scoring with his face. It was just a great game. in terms of like what it means for the rest of the season, I kind of think these Liverpool v City games almost, they're kind of standalone for me. I think there's been so much hype around these matches as, oh, it's going to be the title decider, even though Arsenal are involved this season as well. I kind of feel like they're almost like a cup match. You have to judge them on their own merits. Liverpool are clearly enjoying the sort of impact of Klopp saying that he's going to leave, and that seems to really galvanise them, even though they've had the injuries. The young players are having a real difference. City have been, look like they've been unstoppable recently. So I'm not sure what it's going to mean, but obviously, it's a nice distraction from watching Burnley that we seem to have a three-team title race. I can't even remember the last time that was the case. It must be over a decade.
Jay?
I agree with everything that that Jamie's saying there. Really, really entertaining game for the neutral, as we are on this. Well, maybe not all of us neutral, are we, Kev? But it's an entertaining game, as Jamie said. Diaz should have won the game for Liverpool. He had the chances, didn't he? But other than not scoring, I think he did everything else right. He really caused City a lot of problems. But it was, it's even entertaining with the subs when De Bruyne threw his toys out of the pram for being subbed with Pep on a touchline, which was it. But I didn't understand. Every time City had the ball, Liverpool fans focused on booing, and literally for the whole game. I was a little bit bemused by that. Why did you just get behind your own team and, you know, cheer them on rather than just constantly booing for 90 minutes? I find that a little bit odd, but there we go. It's, entertaining game. Doku had a great chance, come off the post. I mean, that was literally millimetres, wasn't it? It could have gone in if it had been a millimetre the other way, potentially. Yeah. Penalty straight after half-time, Edison doing it again. Well, actually, I'd say doing it again. He did the same thing against Palace, but it was outside the area on Mateta. Palace didn't get anything for that. So it happens, doesn't it? But controversial decisions. It had a bit of everything, didn't it, really, other than the sending off, perhaps, in the game. And it was nice seeing Klopp and Guardiola at the end of the game, giving each other a bit of respect and all that. So, these games are genuinely you know, pretty fiery. But it, you know, it was on the pitch, and it was a hard-fought pint, and I think it was probably a fair pint each. And you know, by the time the final whistle went, to be quite honest, but entertaining all the way through. Built up all week, wasn't it? I guess a bit tiresome sometimes, but it was built up to be the big game, and it actually delivered this time, which was good. So yeah, for the neutral watching on, enjoyable game. In terms of what it means for the title race, I mean, it's as you were really, wasn't it? Arsenal are top of the table now. It's really close, a three horse title race. I mean, you know, if you're as a neutral watching on from that, I mean, it's exactly what you need in the Premier League, really, isn't it? So it's not just you know, a little bit one-sided as it has been in recent seasons. So yeah, looking forward to what the next 10, 11 games and what that will bring. Obviously, the big game coming up next is City v Arsenal. See how that one goes, and then it's probably a free-for-all for the rest of the season when neither of them have got to play each other again. So that's going to be really intriguing to see if anybody drops points. It's hard to see either of these teams dropping points against anybody else, let's face it. I mean, you know, they've done a great job so far, but there's going to be a blip for somebody somewhere, and that's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, excellent points from both of you. How exciting the game was, how many chances there were, especially towards the end, where it was like City could have scored, Liverpool could have scored, City could have scored, final whistle. But yeah, obviously fascinating stuff. Now for something that's less fun for me. I try to not be too overtly biased on this show, but maybe a little bit of bias has creeped in because we haven't really talked about Arsenal recently. Which is a bit crazy. As Jay just said, now they're top of the table, absolutely in the title race. Like Jamie said, all three teams really fighting for it in a real meaningful way, especially with just 10 match weeks left. But yeah, Mikel Arteta, because of their recent success, won manager of the month. They won all four matches in the Premier League in February with a goal difference of plus 16 in 1 month, which is pretty solid. A lot of clubs not at plus 16 on the season. So anyway, I figure it's time. We really need to dive into Arsenal a bit more. Curious your guys' thoughts on the job that Arteta's done recently on the season at large, etc. With them, like I said, in first, very much in the title race.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me to be too critical when Arsenal have probably taken almost as many points, scored as many goals as Burnley in an entire season in just four games, but... Should we have a look at the teams that they've been playing in that run? Is that too harsh? I know you can only beat who you play, but since the game when they beat Liverpool, they've had a pretty soft run. They've hammered West Ham, who were very up and down. Then they've played Burnley, Sheffield United, Newcastle during their really bad run. I think you'd expect them to win all those games. You wouldn't expect them to be winning 6-0, 5-0 every week, but you'd expect a team at the top to be winning those games, so... Maybe a little bit too much hype for Arsenal's run of form for me. But I say that as someone who was fortunate enough to miss the game at the Turf. So maybe if I'd seen them in the flesh myself, then maybe I'd feel a bit differently. I couldn't go to that game, but the family friend that we sent with our tickets said it was one of the best games he'd seen. He was unbelievably impressed with Arsenal. Said Declan Rice was fantastic. And he thought they were real title challengers on that form. So they've clearly performed very well. I think it's worthy of praise how they've managed to adapt to not really having that reliable goal scorer. Obviously, there was so much talk going into January about Arsenal need to buy a striker. Gabriel Jesus isn't doing it. They need to get a striker. And they didn't. And everyone was like, well, Arsenal can't win the league because they didn't buy a striker. Well, how did that go for them? Because they've scored all these goals and they didn't buy a striker. So clearly something's gone right. I think perhaps the most impressive thing is what he's managed to do with Kai Havertz, right? Like, it seemed a strange one when they signed Havertz for quite a lot of money. He's a guy who's moved for a huge amount of money in his career without really having done a lot since that breakthrough season at Leverkusen. It was a bit of a figure of fun earlier in the season. He was missing chances, so not involved in matches. There was stats about him barely touching the ball in games, and suddenly he's one of the informed players in the league. So Arteta's done a fantastic job with Havertz, turned him into a really important player. But yeah, I think they've had a soft run of games. Even this weekend, right, Brentford are really struggling. They've lost a lot of games recently. And there was a crucial moment where Havertz has gone down in the box. He'd already been booked. Clearly a dive. The referee, for whatever reason, decides not to book him for diving. And then Havertz scores the winner. maybe that's the kind of thing that happens when teams are on the way to winning the title. But yeah, I can understand Brentford. Thomas Frank was furious about it, wasn't he? It was a real sort of sliding doors moment, that one, where Havertz really should have been sent off for cheating, and Arsenal got away with one there. But you can't argue with results. I just think we'll learn a bit more about Arsenal's title credentials in that Manchester City game. That's going to be the real crunch.
Yeah, I agree with much of, again, Jamie's taken my thunder a little bit, but I think you have to give Arsenal a bit of credit, because they did beat Liverpool 3-1 in a run of games. And I think Arteta is very much, a new Pep Guardiola, isn't he? He's come from the school of Pep, hasn't he? And, you know, shows a lot of traits in terms of, you know, how he coaches players. Jamie mentioned rightly so about Kai Havertz. I mean, he had a great season in the Bundesliga. He was that kind of number 10 in that number 10 role for them, and hasn't really, I mean, never really did it at Chelsea, did he? And a massive surprise to see him go to Arsenal. But slowly but surely, he's working his way into the team as being, you know, one of the more important players on the team sheet each week. And yeah, I don't want to get into players' antics, because it infuriates me week in, week out, to be honest. You know, players' antics on the pitch, every team does it. Probably more so, you see it more from the top sides, because they have more to lose, perhaps, or more to gain. I don't know which way around it goes, but sometimes that these decisions don't go. We've seen it today with two red cards today in different games. You know, one was a straight red, the other one wasn't given, went to VAR and wasn't given. So, you know, it just happens in, there's no consistency, but I don't want to bore everybody with that, because we talk about that every week, I think. But yeah, Arsenal, you can only beat who's in front of you. But, you know, the way that they're scoring the goals, I mean, watching them play Sheffield United on, was it Monday night, wasn't it? I'm just in awe of them. Yes, Sheffield United were bottom of the table, and have a goal difference of minus 50, thanks to Arsenal and that trouncing. But, you know, to go 3-0 up as quickly as they did, yes, you know, they're away at bottom of the table. You expect them to win these games, but not by the margins that you're seeing. Yeah, they beat Palace 5-0 at home. As Jay mentioned, Burnley, yeah, you would expect Arsenal and these teams to be beating these sides. But, you know, along the way, they beat Liverpool, title rival. And, you know, wins like this and scoring goals like this, you know, breed confidence, don't they, in a team? And, you know, if you continue that into these big games, like they've, it's going to be fascinating to see how they take on Man City. They have a break for a couple of weeks, like a lot of teams do, over I think Palace don't play for 3 weeks now. I think that's the same for City, isn't it? City Arsenal, I think they play on the 30th or that weekend, Easter weekend. So, you know, what with the international break and being out of the FA Cup, maybe that does Arsenal a favour. Obviously, yeah, they're playing in the Champions League this week, but after that. So it might do them a favour, not being in any other competitions. Maybe they'll be a bit fresher, you know, whereas City, Liverpool, they're competing on several fronts this season. Maybe that will go in Arsenal's favour. You never know. But yeah, give them credit. I think Arteta is turning into the new Pep in terms of the way he's coaching and way he's coaching players. I've been really impressed by him, to be honest. He's, it's been interesting to see how he's got on at Arsenal. It could have gone, you know, they could have got rid of him when he had that dodgy spell a couple of seasons ago. But as it's turned out, they didn't, stuck with him. And, you know, sometimes that pays off.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Was it 6th and 8th or something like that, where they were talking about getting rid of him, and then said just kind of doubled down and it all turned around? Obviously, they spent a fair chunk of change. I think Zinchenko was a really important signing for them. And then the center backs, who I don't think were that much money in hindsight, Saliba and Gabriel. But
no,
anyway.
I don't think they were, no.
Yeah. Goalkeeper situation's a little weird, but that to the side. Both you guys kind of alluding to it, but do you think that they'll ultimately win the title? And perhaps more importantly, do you want them to? Is there like a sense, either with you guys or just in general, that people don't want to see another City versus Liverpool run in for the title?
I don't really have a preference. I think it would arguably be good for the league if there was a different champion. Obviously, it's quite a long time now since Arsenal won the title under the Arsene Wenger, and they had all those years where they were sort of fading and paying for the stadium. I think the goalkeeper issue that you just mentioned is one of the reasons why I think they'll fall short. I think that's a real weakness for them. Obviously, Liverpool have got Alisson out at the minute. I'm not sure when he's due back, but Keller has done a very good job as his replacement. Yes, Ederson has his moments of madness, but the way he allows City to build from the back has been a crucial part of their run of titles. So I wouldn't have Arsenal as favourites. Something that we haven't mentioned is that during that run of wins, they did lose to Porto in the Champions League. I wouldn't have Porto as up there with the best teams in England. So maybe that's a sign of Arsenal not quite being really ready. But people said that last season and wondered if they'd be able to come again, and they did. So I wouldn't write them off, but I still think City are probably favourites. They've been there, done it. They seem to really hit their stride at this stage of the season. They've got John Stones back. I know we're going to talk about predictions later on, but yeah, I think Arsenal have maybe got those weaknesses at either end of the pitch. They've scored all these goals recently, but it comes down to a crunch game like the Man City game, and if they maybe only get a couple of chances, have they got someone who you would rely on to stick that chance away when it's you have to beat Man City to potentially win the title, right? If all the other games we're expecting them to win. I'm not sure they've got that real killer in the box, and I think the goalkeeper issue is something that Arteta has been juggling all season without really coming to a resolution, and I wonder if that's going to bite him on the bum at some point.
Yeah, totally. I mean, as we saw with Aaron Ramsdale yesterday, you know, made an absolute howler, but then on the flip side, he made two really good saves later in the game. So, but I think, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think that's the only thing that you question Arteta on as to why he's created that out of nothing, really. Because, you know, Ramsdale was great last season for them. Every keeper makes mistakes, let's face it. You know, probably Edison is. But Edison made a mistake today with a penalty. So, you know, you're in that position, aren't you, as a goalkeeper? It's pretty, you know, it costs you if you make a mistake, or costs the team as such. It's a difficult one. I think I did predict Arsenal to win the title at the start of the season, to be honest. And I think it's taken them a while to come around to the fact that actually they look like title contenders. It may sound a bit mad, but I think they took a while for Declan Rice to settle. And the way they played last season in terms of attacking, they were a lot more open attacking-wise. And they didn't start the season like that this year. But that's obviously, you know, the glut of goals they've gone through in recent weeks. You know, that seems a long time ago now. So, yeah, I can see them winning the title. Jamie's right. I think it will help the Premier League a lot if a different team wins a title. But, you know, they're a London team and they won't shut up about it if they win it. Seriously. But I don't really mind who wins it, to be honest. I mean, it's a bit boring if I say I'm always a fan of different teams winning things, and it'd be a bit boring if City win it again. I guess, you know, I'm saying the same one thing about Arsenal, and if Liverpool win it, it'd be the same thing, wouldn't it, Liverpool fans? So it's like I've got no horse in the race, let's face it. And I think it'd be enjoyable to have three teams challenging for the title right down to the wire. I think a lot's riding on the Arsenal City game. If that ends up being a draw and Liverpool win their game that weekend, you know, we're looking at Liverpool being top. So I think, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be nip and tuck each week after that, potentially. But it's going to be fascinating for neutral. And there's no reason why Arsenal can't win it. You know, it's that thing about this season. Again, Jamie mentioned it. Everyone said they were missing a striker and never win a title, but you know, they've kind of disproved that the way they've scored goals across their whole team. So, you know, that isn't an issue. They're playing well. If they can get something out of City, whether it's a draw like today's game was, then you know, they could be in a good spot. But it's, you know, it depends who makes a mistake first, isn't it, between then and the rest of the season. So yeah, it's difficult to call. It's so difficult to call that it could be either one of them to go on and win it. A couple of weeks ago, I don't know what it was about Liverpool, just weren't impressing me. I enjoyed watching Arsenal and City more. And as the last few weeks have gone on, I kind of found that probably a little bit unfair, because, you know, Liverpool played really well today and they could have won that game today if Diaz had put his chances away. They could have beaten City, and it's not easy beating this City side because they're such a good side. But, you know, it could have been quite different. But, yeah, I think Arsenal can, but so could the other two. So it's that tight, I think, this season, which is a good thing.
Yeah, also, to give Liverpool a little more credit, they've also been playing with teenagers in cup finals and this match and stuff lately, and have still managed to continue to pick up points, which I think is pretty impressive, although we know injuries come for all of us at some point. It just seems like they're about to have ridden through their biggest issue. Obviously, Salah back and everything now. Cool. Well, we just talked about the title race for a while there, but I wanted to continue discussing, since there are just 10 match weeks left, who all you think will finish in the top kind of four or five, up to you, if you think England will get the coefficient spot, although certainly getting no favors at the moment, and then who you think might be in and around the relegation spots.
Well, I'm going to stick my neck out. I think the current top three will be the top three.
Ooh, yeah.
I think anyone's going to break into that little club. Yeah, I mean, I started talking about it before in my last answer. I think City are probably still the favourites for me. I think you're looking for weaknesses in that side and I don't really see any. Maybe Alvarez is in a bit of form in the last few weeks is maybe something, and De Bruyne seems a bit not De Bruyne. Today he came off and he was unhappy about it, but he had no reason to be unhappy, really. He had quite a poor game. Haaland missed out City the other week, but you'd expect he's going to start scoring loads of goals again because it's just what he does. When Rodri's available, they never seem to lose. John Stones is back. He's crucial for them. I think City, it's just going to be like muscle memory as it really gets into that key. You have to win every week. They're used to doing that in the run-ins. You've seen them in the last few years. It gets to the spring and City just don't stop winning. So yeah, I think it's going to be really difficult to stop them. But like Jay said, it's all down to the Arsenal game, isn't it? And Liverpool showed that City are vulnerable today. Arguably should have won it with the chances Diaz said. So the chances Diaz had. So if it's a similar game and Arsenal get something out of that, then suddenly people will be saying, well, City couldn't be Arsenal, they couldn't be Liverpool, they're not going to win the title. But I think City are playing for history, aren't they? They've got the chance of doing the double treble, which would be an amazing thing. So part of me wants them to do that because I think it would be sort of justification for all the financial charges and the titles are potentially going to get taken off them anyway. But if they did the double treble and then had everything taken away, it would be sort of all the money that they've spent arguably wrongly and the squad that they've given Guardiola and getting all the best off the field staff in the world and everything. If they did the double treble, it would just be, well, we've sort of perfected football. And I think it would be something the real, I don't know. I think it would just be a good thing to say you've seen. I think City have some fantastic players. I really like Alvarez, even though he's not been playing very well recently. Phil Foden's arguably the best player in the league at the moment. Bernardo Silva, I think he's a wonderful, wonderful player. He never gets the plaudits that he deserves. I think he's been a top 10 player in the world probably for 5 years and no one ever seems to mention it. For Liverpool, I think a lot depends on how Salah comes back. He looks pretty rusty today. They need him to get back to top form quickly because he's really their main guy. If you look at that attack, Nunez is very sort of erratic. Diaz, not really the killer in front of the goal. And like we've mentioned, they're relying on a lot of young players at the minute because of the injuries they've had. But unlike Arsenal, they've been toe-to-toe with City and come out on top, so they know how to get the job done in the title race, even though they did it in that sort of weird COVID pandemic season. So I think it is a tough call, but I think City, for me, are going to be really hard to stop. Probably Liverpool second, Arsenal third. In terms of the Champions League places, I've got no idea how the coefficient works, to be honest. I don't know if it's looking likely or unlikely that England gets that fifth spot. The result today, with Villa losing heavily to Spurs, I think that's a sign of the momentum of the two teams. Spurs seem to be clicking. Timo Werner seems to have made a big difference there, yeah, which is weird. Villa, I think, maybe struggling a little bit with the pressure. As soon as people started talking about them being in the title race, they stopped winning games. And they've got the European stuff as well to contend with, so I think it's going to be difficult for them. They've probably had their best part of the season. If they can cling on and finish fifth and maybe sneak in that way, that's probably as good as they can hope for. So yeah, I think Spurs are looking really good for that fourth spot.
Yeah, all really good points, to be honest. I think what's crucial for City is De Bruyne and Haaland, because I don't think we've seen the best of them this season. Obviously, they had periods out injured. They're coming back into the side. Once they click again, it's probably hard to say anybody's actually going to beat them once they're back on form. Yeah, De Bruyne looked out of sorts today. He has for a few weeks. You know, he had a bit of a flat. He's shown flashes at that brilliance, you know, different stages since he's come back. But I think sometimes it takes players, you know, a little while to get back into a side, particularly when you're battling at the top of a table across Europe and all these competitions. And, you know, the criticism of Haaland this season is ludicrous. I mean, last season was ridiculous, you know, the amount of goals he scored. But, you know, it's always going to be difficult to follow up with that. And, yeah, I don't buy into this. I think Jamie alluded to it earlier about Havertz having, just minimal touches in a game, but actually, you know, scoring that crucial goal or whatever. You know, that's been labelled of Haaland in recent weeks. You know, he doesn't touch the ball very often, but it's a striker, you don't need to. Just if he scores the goals... If he's there to score a goal and that's his one touch in the game, then who cares? And they win the game. You know, I don't buy into all that. Stats can go a little bit too far sometimes in my mind. But I think it's crucial for City to get those two players back on form. And when they do hit, it depends how long that's going to take. Like Kev said, it's only 10 games to go. They have Champions League, they have FA Cup as well. So, you know, there's a lot of football still to go, but, you know, not a lot of time for those two to get back in the side and really click like they have done like last season. So I think that's going to be crucial. It's difficult to see past City, really, if I'm completely honest. I think for me, Liverpool are probably the ones that are the outsiders at the moment, probably because of the injuries that they've had and the youngsters that they've been having to field. Nothing against them playing. They've been brilliant, let's face it. But I think in the running, you need a bit of experience. You need those players like Salah to be back on form. He looked really rusty today. Robertson was back on as sub today, which will help them. Yeah, those crosses into the box really did cause problems for City today. And that's what Liverpool need back in the side. So it's so tough. I'm gonna say City just to edge it from Arsenal, then Liverpool, I think. But that can change each week as we see fixtures happening over next couple of months. So it's going to be really intriguing to watch. I mean, Villa Spurs today was a massive game, wasn't it, really, in terms of the fourth spot. Spurs look great at the moment. They fought back against Palace last weekend to score those three goals in, the last 15 minutes to get the win, and fair play to them for doing that. Showed a bit of quality. And they showed that quality again today. I think Villa will miss McGinn for getting that straight red today. That'll be a big miss for them for three games he'll miss now. Really crucial part of the season as well for them to miss somebody of that quality in their midfield. So it was a bit of a foolish red card from his perspective. And also, you know, like Jamie said, they've got Europe to contend with as well. You do get a feeling that this is Villa's kind of season to really grab something, you know, in terms of a top four spot, because, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, you know, the financial fair play rules for different clubs. You know, there's been conversations about Wolves in the last couple of weeks, and also Villa in terms of the losses that they've made and things like that. So you do get a feeling that this could be the last season for a few seasons at least that they can properly challenge without starting to have to think about that kind of stuff. So, which is a real shame, because it's nice to see different teams up there challenging for these top four spots than the usual suspects. But I, not just off the back of today's game, but I think Spurs will edge it. I think they've looked good in the last couple of weeks. They're starting to click, starting to get into place. Madison back on form, scoring a goal today. That's going to be massive for them. As Jamie said, Werner getting two goals in two games. I mean, what's going on in the world? It's crazy.
Hey, I'm perfectly enjoying the Werner Renaissance. I don't know if that works out spelled out, but we'll take it. That's an absolutely fair reaction. And I assume you've been joined by the audience in their homes or cars or wherever they're listening. I do just want to point out an odd thing about Tottenham. Well, there are many odd things. Scheduling wise, Fulham next week, then Luton, who are obviously in the relegation fight, West Ham, obviously a London derby, then Nottingham Forest, who are in the relegation fight, then Newcastle, who might be tough, but obviously they're mid-table, then City, Arsenal, Liverpool, back-to-back-to-back, then end the season with Burnley and Sheffield United, who are both also in the relegation race. So, like, everyone is going to have something to play for except Newcastle, who I'm sure are still trying to play for pride and having their, you know, trying to decide that squad, who's still going to be involved next year. Jake seemed pretty confident that they're going to keep Eddie Howe, so maybe not as much drama on that side. But just weirdly...
Sheffield United won't have anything to play for either.
No. Fair. But yeah, so just something to maybe keep an eye on, that Tottenham are going to have a weird say in what happens, obviously, in what happens in the top four or five race, depending on whether or not they pick up their own points, who might end up in the relegation spots, because they're playing four different teams that are in that race. And obviously, City, Arsenal, and Liverpool, we've already talked about many times, and we still have all of them yet to play. City and Arsenal at home, for whatever that's worth. And then at Anfield versus Liverpool.
Could Arsenal win the league? Is that still possible?
Ooh, I'm
we
not
there again.
I'm not mathematically confident enough or footballing confident enough to make a statement there. But mentioning that we're playing so many of the teams in that relegation race, do we think it's just going to be what it is now? Do we think Nottingham Forest could get pulled down into that? What's kind of the thinking from you guys right now?
I think it's difficult to see the bottom three getting out of it. I think Burnley, Sheffield United, it's a matter of time. Now I was looking at the fixtures the other week and trying to work out what day it was going to be that we got down. I think any fading hopes have pretty much gone for us. Sheffield United, similarly, they probably should have won this weekend and didn't. That happens when teams are at the bottom. We can clearly have a chance of getting out of it. I think we talked a lot about it last week, didn't we, about the Everton financial stuff and Forest going to get a points deduction. Is any of this going to be dealt with before the end of the season? I think that could throw a spanner in the works. Forest's form has been fairly mixed. I don't think changing the manager's had a big impact there. Brentford are really struggling. They seem to have lost a lot of games recently. So there are teams that could get sucked into it, but I think the bottom three have looked substantially weaker than everyone else all season. It's difficult to see them coming out of it. I'd really love to see Luton stay up, not just for like the Tom Walker stuff, which is obviously terrible, but the way that they've approached it, sort of banking the money, and everyone thought they were just going to ride it out and finish bottom and try and come back next year. But they've had a real crack at it. They play aggressive front foot football. They have a real go at teams. They don't seem to worry about giving teams too much respect. That the manager has deserved a lot of plaudits for what he's done there, Rob Edwards. I think we'll certainly see him back in the Premier League if we don't see Luton back. So, yeah, I think also, like, as a Burnley fan, I think it adds something to the Premier League when you have the smaller clubs with the tight, old-fashioned grounds. I think that sort of contrast between the have-monies and then your Lutons and Burnleys, I think that's one of the things that makes the Premier League so watchable. So, yeah, as soon as Burnley down, which will be soon, I will be rooting for Luton, but I think odds are probably against them.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of watching Palace play Luton yesterday, and admittedly they scored with the last touch of the game in injury time, which is really bugging me, the stat about conceding goals so late in games, because I think it was Match of the Day tweeted yesterday about, oh, it's broken the record for how many late goals there are, how many goals there's been scored in injury time this season. Well,
it's 50 minutes not, never
exactly right. This is the first season where, I mean, as an example, we played Villa away, and by the end of the game, we had played 25 minutes injury time across both the end of the first half, end of the second half. It's just, you know, it's just ludicrous. It's no wonder we're getting more injuries this season as well. And I'm sure that's because of it as well, because they're playing more football. And I get it that they want the ball in play more often, but maybe they need to penalise players on the pitch for wasting too much time and taking whatever. Anyway, we've gone down a tangent there. But yeah, watching Luton yesterday, I was a bit disappointed by them. Yeah, they got a draw, and I don't know whether it was on a balance of play. I mean, Palace should have put them, I mean, should have been 2-0 up at least by that point, and probably didn't do ourselves any favours by leaving it, you know, at that scoreline by that point in a game. And they, you know, fair play to them. They battled hard, got the equaliser. They're a hard team to play, you know. But I think if they play like that for the rest of the season, then they'll be going down, because I can't see them getting many more points elsewhere if they play. But admittedly, they got a point yesterday, but they need more than that at this stage of the season, really. I think the biggest issue that everyone has at the moment is the cloud of the points deductions. You know, Everton already had one. They've been given some back. They're potentially getting another one. Forest getting another one. Is it going to be this season? You know, all of this timing is just, it's just ludicrous. And Rob Edwards said the right thing. He said, we want to do things the right way and save ourselves and not have to worry about that kind of thing. But I think is in the back of everybody's minds, let alone Forest and Everton. Forest aren't in great form. Everton aren't in great form at the moment either, even though they've had those points back. You'd have thought that would have given them a real boost for those points being back and allowed them or helped them to push on a little bit, but they just haven't. They've looked really poor the last couple of weeks at least. But on the point of Rob Edwards, so impressed with the guy. I felt so sorry for Forrest Green that he'd got promoted to the Football League. He saw the bright lights of Watford, if there are any bright lights in Watford. I'm not sure if there are. didn't last very long there. I think Watford have sacked six managers since he was sacked from there. And obviously he went to Luton and done an amazing job. Yes, you know, the platform was there for him, but he's brought them up and we're going to see more of him in the future. He's going to be a Premier League manager for sure. Got a lot of time for the guy and fair play to him yesterday. I mean, it was a tough, tough game. They're a tough team to play, but they need more than a draw. They were happy with a draw, of course, at that stage of the game. But I think it's probably between them and Forest. I'd love to see Luton stay up. You know, that storyline, you know, is just amazing. And, you know, they get criticised for their ground and stuff like that. But, you know, Palace have been in the Premier League for 10 years and we get criticised for our ground week in, week out anyway. So it's just, they're not the only ones. But it's an amazing story. And it's not often you get those stories in football. It's normally all about the money, the top clubs and all that kind of thing. It'd be great to see them survive this season. Just not at the expense of us. I'll just add that.
Fair. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. We did talk about it last week on the show. Just all the points deduction stuff just makes us all such a mess. But assuming there's no crazy stuff, it is probably the three that are there going down. But it would be fun to see Luton survive. No love lost for ex-Spurs legend Nuno Espirito Santo. But it does seem like it'll be one of those two. Cool. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Jamie, we'll start off talking to you about Burnley. Sorry. So I just want to be on air and apologize for texting you when you were 2-0 up and saying, are you able to come on and talk about your win today? Knocking on wood. The knocking on wood was not enough to suffice ultimately. But aside from bad vibes and or jinxing it for me personally, what did you see as the cause of giving away that 2-goal lead?
Well, I'd say probably 99% you, and then 1% West Ham.
No complaining, Jamie.
I think it was a funny one. I think I'd said in the build-up to the game, it's probably as good a time to play West Ham in between the two European games. They don't have a big squad. They find the adaptation when the knockout games. I don't know if they're prioritising Premier League or Europa League this season. It's difficult to tell, but I think on the back of an away game, they clearly put a lot of energy into the game in Germany midweek. So but it was a good time to play them the first half. That seemed to be the case. West Ham were very, very flat. They took the two England midfielders off that Gareth Southgate had turned up to watch off at half-time, which is quite funny. Phillips and Ward-Prowse both had really bad games. But I thought we were good the first half. We played really well. There were signs last weekend that we were starting to move closer to a team that can compete. It's far too late anyway, but the team was much more looking like it could get results. But then we just do what we've done all season. Started the second half terribly, immediately gave a goal back, and then it's just a case of trying to cling on. I thought the approach in the second half of just trying to defend was really ill-advised considering the number of goals that we've conceded this season. I don't think anyone had faith that we were going to hold on. And it was obviously going to be Danny Ings, our ex-player, who was going to put the final blow in. So it was a tale of differing substitutions as well for me. Ings made a big difference. Changes that Moyes made at half-time. Yes, he's got better players to bring on, but their substitutions made a positive difference. Ours made a negative one. I didn't understand the changes company made. We had a decent balance in the first half, and at half-time he took off one of the wide players and put on Josh Brown, who was more of a central player, but he played him tucking in off the left wing. We tried Brownhill in that role a lot. It never really works. It wasn't Brownhill's fault that we conceded straight after kickoff, but I think it was just telling that we made a defensive change and immediately conceded a goal. It's just very Burnley. And then we went to a back five with another change and left ourselves with no one to carry the ball up the pitch. It just felt like it was coming. It's worth watching the highlights if you want to dig them out, though, because the end of the game was ridiculous. It was really frantic end-to-end stuff. Both teams had chances to win it. There was penalty peels, a lot of stuff going on. It went into sort of the second minute of only eight, just the eight added minutes. And I said to my partner, we were watching the game, I said, there's no way this game finishes 2-2. So obviously it did. But it could have been any score in added time. I just feel like company starting to wind fans up, and I've sort of had enough a while ago, but some of his comments before this game where he was talking about he's going to be proven right on the James Trafford thing in particular, but basically the decisions that he's been making, it's his way or the highway by the sounds of it. And results speak for themselves. Like, with 10 points adrift with 10 games to go, it's not been good enough. I don't think anyone expected us to struggle quite this badly. And today's match should have been an ideal opportunity to get a crucial win and give us some hope, and we've found a way not to win the game, which is kind of what we've done all season, really.
Gotcha. Did it hurt extra because it ended up being Danny Ings that scored it, or are things just more numb than that at this point?
I think it's kind of inevitable. As soon as he started getting ready to come on, I was like, oh, great, so this is how this one's going to end. I didn't realise it had been quite so long since he'd scored. I think there was a stat going out that he hadn't scored in the Premier League for over a year. So it's like, oh, great, of course, he scored against us to take a couple of points off us. But he was brilliant. Anyone who watched the game, Ings was arguably the man of the match, and he came on with about 20 minutes to go. He had one marginal offside rolled out for Antonio chesting it down. He was very unlucky that didn't count. He hit the crossbar. He could have had a hat-trick easily in 20 minutes. He was all over us. We were playing a back five and kept leaving him unmarked. It's like, what are you doing? This guy's good. But yeah, a small part of me is actually pleased to see him making an impact in the Premier League. I've got a lot of time for Danny Ings. I think he was desperately, desperately unlucky with the injury he got just after he went to Liverpool. That sort of really derailed his career. He's not really been the same since, but I think when he's fit and on form, he's still a really, really useful Premier League player.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, that one came back to bite you, though. Especially after I jinxed it. Although, I'm pretty sure last week when we talked about relegation teams conceding in the last 10 minutes, you said you wish you had a lead to concede. So,
well, there you go. It's my own fault. So, I'm not coming on the show again.
It's on both of us. I think we're willing to accept that blame. Jay, we'll come to you now to talk about Crystal Palace and kind of thematically talking about giving up late leads. It's a thing you've done in three of your last four games. Obviously, Glasner only been your manager for two of those. The other one was just a pretty comfortable win against a team that I won't mention. Just curious your thoughts on why Palace keep kind of facing this issue. Is it just because you've had injuries and there's a lack of depth? Do you think it's a lack of fitness or just bad luck that kind of comes with a 38-week season?
I think it's a mixture. It's the stat is boring the life out of me every time Palace play. It's last 10 minutes, and you're sitting there thinking, Yeah, and the one stat, the other stat they don't mention is that we've gone 280 corners without scoring directly from a corner. So that's the other boring stat, which they seem to roll at every time. But as I said, stats are just there to, they don't actually mean an awful lot. Well, they do when you're not winning games, but but I think, yeah, there's a mixture. I mean, any team with their four best players out for a period due to injuries is going to be affected, you know, whether it's Palace, whether it's City or United, Liverpool, sorry, I don't know why I put United in that bracket, no idea. I think losing Decore as early in the season with a really horrible injury really did impact us big time, because he was the foil in front of the back line basically and mopped up everything. He had a great first season for us last season, and then went and tore his Achilles early in the season, which has kind of impacted us a fair bit and probably didn't help Hodgson, you know, but Hodgson didn't really help himself, let's face it. But, you know, we're in a brave new world now with Oliver Glasner. He's had three games in charge. He's had the full house already, the win, the loss and the draw now. Probably should have had the second win yesterday against Luton. But, you know, some of these things take time. And, you know, we've looked better under him. I think, you know, when you look back at his time at Eintracht Frankfurt, Wolfsburg, you know, he has a way of playing and the style and things like that. And that's going to take time to kind of adjust to from the years of Hodgson, let's face it, you know. But we're, you know, you can see it. You saw it a lot yesterday. We're pressing high. There's a lot more energy in the team. And I think the fitness element is just going to come. Obviously, we're late in the season. The whole thing about Hodgson take over for this season was just so Glasner could come in the summer. But obviously, things didn't work out right. He's been talked into, you know, joining us a little bit earlier, didn't want to join during the season, which for obvious reasons, you want your own players, your own ideas, you want a pre-season, that kind of thing. It's a tough thing for managers to take over during the course of the season, particularly when it's, you know, January's gone. But I've been quite impressed with both what he's been saying and how he's applied the team. You can tell there's a fair few changes out there. Yeah, Eze's back in the side now. He's one of the four best players that we've missed. There's glimpses. I mean, you saw a glimpse of it last week, Kev, against Spurs. Yesterday, yeah. He was in and out of the game. But he's one of those players that just, you know, you need him in your team because he can just do something out of nothing. He almost did yesterday with an effort, which the keeper was off his line. And yeah, that just grazed crossbar. So that could have been quite different from that point. But he's just one player that can do that. So while we should have won the game yesterday, I think, you know, Glasner said the right thing in that, you know, it's taking time to adjust and we don't have a game for 3 weeks now. We play Forest in our next game on the 30th of March, which is, you know, which is a game where, similar to yesterday really, against Luton, you know, we are at arm's length with the bottom three at the moment, but, you know, you don't want to start losing games at the moment because that gap starts eroding. So we couldn't lose yesterday. We didn't, you know, we kept Luton at arm's length. They're the team third from bottom. We placed Forest away. Again, same thing. We can't let them, you know, get 3 points out of us. A draw will be fine. Again, it'll keep them at arm's length. We've got some tough fixtures towards the end of the season, so we just need to make sure that we're not caught up in any silliness as the season goes on. But, you know, as the weeks go by, Glasner said that he should have Elise back towards the end of March, early April, which would be, having Elise back would be, just take the pressure off Eze a fair bit. Decore we might have before the end of the season. Guy has had a small operation, which a bit gutting for him really, because he was on course to be in the England squad for the summer. But obviously having the time out injured, you know, we're not sure how long it's going to, it's rumoured to be 8 weeks. He's had two of those already. So yeah, it'd be gutting for him to miss the Euros because he's been in the squads. He's played a few games for England and obviously he's been our best defender, central defender for a couple of seasons now really. So that's another big miss for us. But yeah, I it's promising. You know, it's probably not how we wanted it to happen. You know, the idea was that Hodgson was going to see us through this season without any trouble, but that turned a little bit sour, unfortunately. But we've got a new man in. We're looking decent. We're playing good football. You know, the goal we scored yesterday was a very good goal. We made two really astute signings in January, I have to say. Adam Wharton from Blackburn. Absolutely brilliant player, 20 years of age, he's going to be a star. And Daniel Munoz, we've wanted a progressive fullback for such a long time.
Since we've done this show, and this is year 10.
Yeah, I mean, he's just brilliant. I mean, even Well, he hasn't hit double figures in appearances for us yet, but he has given us so much in that right wing back slot. He's been brilliant, just pushing forward, can defend, is a proper socks down, show your shins and get on with the game sort of player. And I just love that. He had the assist for Mateta yesterday, and can't wait to see more of that. So, two really astute signings in January when, you know, there was a lot of eyebrows raised when we spent that money in January, but actually there were both needs, really. There were both needs, and they're both players that we've been looking at for some time. You know, Palace don't play by players, you know, without doing their research. I think we've been monitoring Wharton for 18 months. And certainly we were monitoring Munoz for at least eight or nine months. So, you know, they do the homework. And that's why Dougie Freeman has been wanted by Man United. Let's face it, you know, they're not silly. He's found these players, you know, Eze, Elise and Wharton and Munoz, managed to get them to Palace. And, you know, United want a bit of that. But hopefully he's going to stick around and we should have an interesting summer ahead should we stay up. I think we're just about be all right. I getting these players back in the side would be really important for us.
Yeah, obviously, excellent points from you there, Jay. I do think you'll probably ultimately be fine, especially, like you said, with some of the players coming back. Elise is obviously incredible. your best central midfielder still to come back. And then, as you said, the additions that you've already made. Also, I was pretty high on Mateta, as you may recall, when you first signed him. And it's kind of been up and down. But what a goal at the weekend.
Great goal. Yeah. I have to say about Mateta, he's been a bit of an in-joke at Palace since he joined us. Because he just seems to be very much like Peter Crouch was kind of treated when he first kind of started coming on the scene as a striker. But over the last, I don't know, 10 games, he's transformed into a player which has, you know, he's not been droppable. His hold up play, he couldn't hold up anything and he couldn't head a ball. All of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but he holds up everything at the moment, scoring goals. It's no surprise that there's a German team interested in buying him in January, which obviously a lot of Palace fans thinking, well, you know, 6 months ago, yeah, snap your hand off. But actually now he's an important part of our side. So, fair play to the guy.
Gotcha. Well, we'll stay there with probably strikers, although I suppose it could be a player from another position. With Player Watch, where I just wanted to know, in these last 10 matches that we've referenced a few times throughout the show, who do you think will be your club's leading scorer?
Yeah, well, we've only got one player who scores any goals, so it's going to have to be Fofana for us.
What a goal by him today as well.
Fantastic, right. Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, make sure you do. I was actually screaming at him to lay the ball out wide because it was kind of the overlapping lungs person. As I was saying, pass it out wide. He just unleashed that shot that flew into the top corner. Fantastic, right. I've been really impressed with Fofana. I wasn't really sure what to make of him when we signed him on loan from Chelsea because... obviously, he's not really had a goal there. It seemed like his spell in Germany didn't go very well. It seemed like the main thing that happened over there was that he fell out with the manager after getting subbed off, hadn't really scored many goals. So, I fairly low expectations, to be fair, but he's made a really good impact. 3 goals now for us in a handful of games. He looks threatening. He's got really good pace. He presses well from the front. It's a shame that we've not been able to play him and Lyle Foster together. Foster's had an operation and doesn't sound like he's going to play much, if at all, before the end of the season. Foster and Fofana would be a decent strike force at this level, I think. But yeah, Fofana's clearly playing for the chance to probably get a Premier League move in the summer. I think Fabrizio Romano tweeted today that we were keen on maybe making it a permanent deal, but there's no option or obligation in the loan deal, so it's up to us to make an offer in the summer, I suppose. And if he scores a few more before the end of the season, I'm sure there'll be other teams looking at him. Clearly Chelsea are going to need to sell some players in the summer, but whether they can just sell their homegrown players and cook the books that way, I don't know. I suspect there'll be a lot of unusual transfer activity going on at Stamford Bridge this summer, put it that way. But yeah, Fofana's been really good for us. I'll be quite happy to see him back next season, but I'm not really sure it's going to happen. I think he'll get better offers elsewhere, unfortunately.
It's a tough one for Palace because when you look at the goal scoring chart, with Mateta's goal yesterday, that puts him on 8 for the season. Edwards on 7, Elise and Eze are both on 6. So it could be any of those four. Let's face it. I mean, Mateta's goal yesterday was excellent. If he could be more, more clinical in front of goal like that, then I'd say Mateta. But when Elise comes back, Eze's going to score goals. I don't see Edouard getting an awful lot of chances. I think Mateta, as I mentioned, has cemented that starting spot now. Even though it's early days under Glasner, but I think he's done plenty, particularly in the last three games, to actually show that he's a number one striker at the moment. He just doesn't look like a striker, but he's one of those players that gets the fans up. He's always in front of the fans, trying to G them up and stuff like that. He's one of those players, and he's got his own chant and everything. He's become kind of one of those fan favourites, really. But like I say, when Elise comes back, he's going to score goals. Eze's going to score goals. So I suspect it'll be one of those two that's going to top the charts for us. But it's nice to see four players actually scoring goals like they have been this season. It's just a shame that they've all had periods out injured, which has impacted us a fair bit. I would suspect it's going to be Eze or Elise to top the charts for us. But it's going to be tight. It's nice to see different players scoring goals.
Gotcha. Well, we will wrap things up there. If you'd like to tell folks where they can reach you or anything you've been working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Hopefully I've not said anything that's going to come back to haunt us when we play next week. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do at Jamie Smith Sport, and I might even get around to writing a newsletter at some point. That's the Known 11 newsletter. It goes out via Substack when I can be bothered to write one.
Yeah, cheers, guys. It's been great fun. I'm Jay. I'm editor of Eagles Beak. Check us out on all socials. The website is theeaglesbeak.com. Check us out there. Mostly Palace, but we do always invite opposition fan chats every week, which is always good fun. You can get in touch with us on any of the socials or by email, info@theeaglesbeak.com.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever it's currently called, at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable, and obviously you can search EPL Roundtable in any of your podcast services. Massive thanks to Jamie and Jay for a great conversation today. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.